April 12, 2016, in Gainesville, Florida. I'm going to be studying Manushiksha. We may only be doing verse 1 today, I'm not sure. It is divided into three main parts. The first three verses deal with the qualification for approaching Krishna in Vrindavan. The next four verses take you on the path and show the obstacles and the counteraction for the obstacles. Then the next four verses give you the steps in perfection, and the last verse is a benediction. Now, what's interesting about Manushiksha is that although it's bringing us to Krishna in Vrindavan, it's not one of those high rasika books that beginners aren't supposed to read. It doesn't contain in it any intimate leelas. And what's interesting is that all the principles in Manushiksha can be followed even by the beginner. So it's principles that can be followed by the beginner, but for those who are ready for an advanced process, that's there also. And I've even put together, not this presentation, but I have a separate presentation that I put together for people who have no previous background with bhakti at all, where I've just taken certain parts of Manushiksha. And we showed that presentation the other day in Houston, and one gentleman came up to me and said, "I can even use this to play the stock market," which I thought was a little odd. But besides being a little odd, I thought, well, it's interesting that even someone like that could find some relevance in Raghunath Das Goswami's book written on the bank of Radhakund for those who want to go to Vrindavan. Okay, so we all ready? Because we had such a slow start today, thinking that maybe we'll just do one verse today and one other day we'll do three verses. I was planning two, like that, over 6 days. So we'll be meeting Krishna willing for the next three nights, today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and the next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now, I'm also going to be teaching Manushiksha, Krishna willing, in Alachua on Saturday and Sunday morning. But then I will have only an hour each day to cover six verses. So I'll actually be showing a different PowerPoint. I have a long PowerPoint and a short PowerPoint. I'll be showing the shorter one, and I'll be moving through it very quickly. Okay? All right. So we're going to go to the qualifications. Oh, thank you so much. We're going to be going for the qualifications to travel the inner path of attraction to Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, in the benedictory verse of Manushiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami says that anyone who sweetly sings these verses while trying to understand their meaning will attain the jewel of the love for Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. That's pretty good. Just sweetly sing the verses, yeah? All right. So keeping that in mind, we're going to sweetly sing each verse together. Is that all right? And the tune is for the Jagannath Astakam, except the difference is that the fourth line we say just like the first three. We don't switch the tune for the fourth line. Now, if you don't know the Jagannath Astakam, you will by the time we get through Manushiksha, if you don't know the tune. So I'd like to do it all together, not call and response, but all of us sing together, and then all of us say the English together too. Is that all right? Okay, let's begin. Guru Gose Gostala Ishu Sujane Bhusaragane Swamantre Shinam Nivrajana Vayuvya Dvandva Sharane Sara Guru Ratima Purvamati Taram Aye Swantur Pratas Chatubiya Viya Chedrita Pada. Oh dear brother, oh mine, having given up all pride, please develop unprecedented and excessive attachment to Sri Guru, to Sri Vrindavana, the abode of cows, to the devotee residents of Vrindavana, to all the devotees on this planet, to the confidential mantra given by Sri Guru, to the holy names of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and to the process of surrendering to the fresh youthful couple of Raja. Holding your feet, I beseech you with sweet words. So sometimes we're told that we should beat the mind with sticks and shoes. But here Raghunath Das Goswami is speaking very sweetly to his mind. Please, please, my dear. So this verse is talking about if you really want to attain the highest spiritual kingdom, You have to start with love. You have to start with some attachment. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about giving up attachment. But here, Raghunath Das Goswami says rakti, or attachment. So there is spiritual and material attachment, and spiritual attachment cures us of material attachment. That is the path of bhakti yoga. So in other forms of yoga, the idea is that you first get rid of all kinds of attachment, and then you can become spiritually attached, or you just stay without any attachment. So I like to give the example that just like if you had a cup of chemical fake juice, and it's interesting that on Hawaiian Air, which as I have a base in Hawaii, I fly from time to time, they give you cups of tropical fruit juice on the plane, but it's only like 1% real fruit juice. Hawaiian tropical fruit, and you look at the ingredients, water, high fructose corn syrup, you know. So if you're accustomed to drinking artificial flavor juice, you know, juicy juice. So our bhakti yoga process doesn't say first dump out your cup and have an empty cup. But it says take the real fruit juice, you know, grow a mango tree in your backyard, pick the mango, squeeze it, and start pouring that juice in. And as you pour the juice in, the mixture becomes more and more and more real juice. So you never have to have an empty cup, is the beauty of bhakti. And you start filling your cup with spiritual attachment. So what is this spiritual attachment? Well, to our teachers, to our gurus. So to the guru who gives us the diksha mantras, to the gurus who instruct us. Factually, to all the gurus mentioned in the Bhagavatam, to the ocean that tells us how to be peaceful when the rivers are flowing in, to the honeybee who teaches us if we collect too much, somebody will steal all of our wealth, to all of our teachers, and real love. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, don't just see your guru as a saintly person. See your guru as your well-wishing friend. Like Srila Prabhupada would always sign, your ever-well-wisher. Of course, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say that guru is not the friend, only Krishna is the friend. And guru is your friend because guru is giving you to your friend. But great love and affection, not official. Now, of course, not artificial love. Not love like, you know, the young girls had for the Beatles or something like that. Not that kind of so-called love where it's really all about yourself. Yes? Right? Prabhupada said you don't keep the guru as a pet. So you don't just say, well, now I have a guru, here's my guru's picture, and my guru just says, very nice, to whatever I want to do. So we see people who do like that. Or they want to make a show. Right, they come once a year on their guru's birthday and they say, Jai Guru Dave! Jai Guru Dave! Right, the rest of the year. I remember listening to a conversation between two devotees and one of them said, well, my heart is at the temple every morning, you know, for Mangal Arati, 4:30 in the morning. And the other said, well, that's nice. Why don't you bring the rest of your body? So we're not talking about a sentimental love. Right? And you find this in every religion, this sort of sentimental love. Oh, I love Jesus. Okay, what are you doing for him? You know, but yet this affection should be here. It shouldn't be just official. Well, here's my guru, okay, he gave me these instructions, all right. We don't want to make it mechanical or ritualistic. So here, Raghunath Das Goswami, don't make it ritualistic. Don't. Here's a saintly person. Yes, I have to worship a saintly person, but there's love. And then he says, and this is going to be very significant when we get to verse 2. He says, and this is, we have in this presentation, you know, it's not, you can't see the pictures as well as we'd like, can you? Oh, well, sorry about that. At least you can see them. But the black and white drawing that we have in this presentation are from the book. And we also have the color paintings from the book. And I'm sorry, the resolution here is quite poor. But to have exclusive and one-pointed attachment to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And this point about exclusive, we'll be talking about in verse 2. And then love for the sacred places, especially in Vrindavan. Now, many people have love for places, isn't it? Yeah? People love, what is Elvis Presley's place? Graceland, right? Elvis Presley walked here. What I find most humorous is people having affection for places of fictional characters. So when I was on the plane, they had an advertisement. They're going to have like Harry Potter land somewhere. And then people are going to go, but he doesn't exist. Or people go to London and they go to Baker Street to Sherlock Holmes' place, but there is no Sherlock Holmes. So people have affection even for fictional characters. And we have affection for the places associated with ourselves, isn't it? Affection for, you know, this is my childhood home. This is where my great-grandfather's from. And people will join the military and quite literally sacrifice their right arm, don't they? Out of affection for the piece of dirt that's on this side of the boundary line. Right? The dirt's on this side of the boundary. They won't do anything for that, but this side. They'll give up their right arm. They'll give up their legs. So to have great attachment for the holy places connected with the Lord. Now, that doesn't just mean going to India, you know, getting together, whatever it is, $1,000, $2,000, and getting on a plane and going to India. But here's also a holy place. Here we have, when Gaudi Thayi is here, the Navadvip is here. And we can set up a holy place also in our home. You just, all you need is a shelf, the top of a chest of drawers, and you can set up Vrindavan there. And Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, have love for these holy places. Have love. Not just officially, well, here's my shelf, here's Krishna, you know, and I just bring in my food and I offer it to him and he's my karma stamping out machine and, you know, okay, no karma in this food, there you go. Karma, free food. Courtesy of the altar in my house. But actual affection, affection for your own little sacred space in your room where Krishna, you know, wherever Krishna is there, there's Vrindavan. Maybe this also means affection for our heart because Krishna's there too. But having genuine affection, really caring. You can think about how would this manifest. If I really had love for the temple here, what would I do? Would I help pick up trash around the property? Would I volunteer to take care of the deities? Again, not as some official capacity, but out of some rule, but out of affection. Remember, this is all verse 1 about what's your qualification for starting on the path to Vrindavan. Then this is really interesting that Raghunath Das Goswami talks about three categories of devotees for whom one should have love. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura categorizes them as the Sanskrit terms kanista, majjhima, and uttama. Now kanista, nista, is very much from the word sta, nista, stay, which is related to the English word stay or stable. So nishta means to stay, nishta. And kanista, you're not stable, which we can roughly translate as a beginner. You're not stable in what you're doing. And majjhima reminds us of the English word middle, and it really means middle or intermediate. And uttama, tama means ignorance or darkness. Uttama means above darkness. Those who are expert, those who are advanced. So you'll find these terms, kanista, majjhima, and uttama, apply to practitioners of bhakti yoga and any form of yoga throughout the scriptures. But how they're defined is very different in different places. Right? If I'm going to say, well, we have a beginner, intermediate, and advanced, you know, guitar player, I could look at their style, I could look at how much they've memorized the chords. I could gauge that in many different ways, correct? Or if I'm going to look at, say, growing up, what makes you mature? What makes you a mature adult? Well, your physical structure, your social relationships, your intellectual development, your emotional development, right? So many things. And they don't all come at the same time, do they? You can be emotionally mature and physically immature and socially mature and intellectually immature. So when the acharyas, when the teachers talk about beginning, intermediate, and advanced, they're looking through different lenses. And please don't try to take all of those descriptions and correlate them with each other. You won't be able to do it. It'll give you a false idea. A beginner according to one system is not a beginner according to another system. So Raghunath Das Goswami giving us these three types of devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakura gives us such fascinating explanation of beginning, intermediate, and advanced. So the advanced devotees here, I don't know how well you can see it, but they're at Radhakunda, the Sangram. These are those who live in Vrindavan, at least in their minds. So those who are absorbed in Krishna in Vrindavan. And the intermediate devotees are those of any tradition, whether they live in Vrindavan or not. The serious practitioners in any tradition. So we've tried to depict here, maybe next time we'll play with the contrast, not tonight, but we've tried to depict here, and you can see in the book, practitioners from all different faiths. So they may not be living in Vrindavan, even in their mind, but we have great love for them. So Raghunath Das Goswami is establishing right in verse 1, you want to go to Krishna in Vrindavan, you cannot be sectarian. which will be a very interesting point when we get to verse 3. Then he says, you should also have love for the brahmanas who teach varnashram. Varnashram means how to act piously in the world, and the brahmanas mean the spiritual teachers. So anyone who teaches, yes, you should love God, you should be a good person in the world, which is not a very high level of spirituality. But still, one should have love for them. We shouldn't look down our noses at them. Well, we're talking about Krishna and Radharani and Vrindavan, and you're just talking about being a good person in the world and taking care of your family and having an honest livelihood. So, although that's certainly a lower platform, we should feel great love for the people who are teaching on that level. And then love for the mantras. So those of us who've been initiated into like the Gayatri mantras, the different mantras, that, and again, have love for them. So not just, okay, it's time to chant my mantras. Okay, then. Not as a ritual, but with attachment and affection, going deep into the meaning of the mantras. So we have some wonderful books in our Hare Krishna movement about the deep meaning of the Gayatri mantras, for example. Prabhupada has some wonderful purports, especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the fifth canto, about the meaning of the Gayatri mantras. So one should be meditating on those meanings and looking forward, right? Like if we have a good friend, I'm going to meet my good friend at noon. So looking forward, at noon I get to chant my mantras. And then great affection and love for the holy name. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, particularly the primary names of Krishna. So you have deep love for Krishna's holy name. So even in the world, people have love for the name of their beloved, isn't it? I remember when I was young, there were songs like that. You know, oh Rhonda, one of them was, oh Gloria. There was another one about Paul and Paula. They were just saying the names of these people over and over again. So when you love someone, you love saying their name. And of course, we all love hearing our own name. You see, that's the sweetest sound to us, is the sound of our name. So again, not chanting ritualistically or not, well, I've taken a vow, I'm initiated, I took a vow to chant 16 rounds, okay. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Okay, now I can do what I really want to do. Put the beads out, what a relief. But to have love and affection, now is the time I get to be with Krishna. Now is the time I get to spend with God. One of my favorite preaching engagements ever was teaching a class to the graduate students at the Southern Baptist Ministry. I got to do that 3 times. And I remember that they would ask me, what are your spiritual practices? So I said, well, we spend 1.5-2 hours a day in private prayer and meditation. They're like, wow, you are so lucky. I wish we did that. So to really value that time, being with Krishna, where all we're doing is just being with Krishna. So this is our, you can't see it very well at all, oil painting of Nandagram. And the 12 oil paintings that we had commissioned for this book are not only coming from the verses themselves, but they're also based on descriptions throughout the scriptures and from the teachings of our acharyas. So what we've included in the one volume is we've included the descriptions from the scriptures that inform the painting. So this is Nandagram from Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and here's a little close-up of Krishna and the gopis from this painting. Now, in addition to having love, Raghunath Das Goswami says we need something else. Because we were saying earlier that people can just say, I love, right, with their guru. It doesn't matter what tradition you're in. It really doesn't. People are going to say, you know, oh, I love Krishna. I love Krishna so much. I remember talking to this one Indian lady. I said, do you chant? Oh, I don't need to chant. I am always in love with Krishna. Right? Well, okay. Maybe. Possible. I remember meeting this one woman in Boston like 40 years ago. And she said, oh, I am a disciple of Jesus. I said, that's wonderful. I said, if you didn't tell me that, and I just looked at your life, how would I see that in your life? She said, oh, you wouldn't. It's all in my heart. So in any human relationship, we wouldn't accept this. Would we accept this? No? So if your spouse just lies on the couch watching TV all day and eating potato chips, and you say to them, you know, are you going to do something? The car needs to be fixed, or dinner needs to be cooked, or something. The baby's diaper needs to be changed. But I love you. You know, I mean, that's love without action isn't very meaningful. Correct? Right? So anybody can just say, we have all over the world, whether that people are saying, I love Jesus, or I love Mohammed, or I love Krishna, or whatever, or I love the light, whatever their idea is, something else has to be there. And not even just action. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, Sada Dhamvan Hitva, and if you can see this is Jesus washing the feet of his disciples, Krishna washing the feet of Sudama, this idea of humility. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami says, Sada, which means always. Dhamvan means pride. Hitva means give up. Always give up pride. Which we translate as completely give up pride. Have it always be there that there's no pride. And you can say, this is just verse 1. I'm supposed to completely give up my pride in verse 1. I'm already finished. Right? So really, you're not going to get free of your pride till verse 7. Don't worry. Okay? When are we going to do verse 7? Next week. So you don't have to give up your pride until Monday. No worries. You don't have to worry about it until then. So what does Raghunath Das Goswami mean here in verse 1, completely give up pride? I remember many years ago, there was one girl who was first starting to visit the temple, and she offered her respects to Prabhupada, and she said, now I completely surrender. And part of me was thinking, well, probably not. You probably don't even know what surrender means. At the same time, let's, for the benefit of the doubt, say she was completely surrendering as to her capacity and understanding at the time. So humility is also relative. I can only be as humble as I even understand what the word means on whatever day it is. What is it? April 12th, 2016. So as I understand humility today, maybe quite different than how I understood it 10 years ago. Or even sometimes 10 minutes ago, isn't it? Sometimes something happens like, whoa. So at least the endeavor to give up humility, to give up pride and become humble. At least the endeavor to give up our pride. At least the idea that it's necessary. It was quite interesting. Most of the time that I've been in the Hare Krishna movement, I've worked in the Hare Krishna movement. I've worked in schools for devotees and worked among other devotees. But one year I took a job in the outside world as part of my studies. I worked in a public school where I had to be undercover as a devotee. It was in the Bible Belt, and if they knew I was a devotee, it would really be a problem. And one of the things I noticed, there was many interesting things in that year, but one of the things I noticed is that most people didn't even have any sort of theoretical acceptance that humility was a virtue. You didn't find people in general thinking that humility was something good. Just in the way they talked, the way they acted, it was quite interesting. I also remember when my mother first visited the Hare Krishna temple, and she asked the temple president, so what are your qualifications for being temple president? So if you went to the local bank and you were thinking about investing your money there, you might ask the bank manager, excuse me, sir, what are your qualifications for being the bank manager? And he would bring out his resume, right? He would say, well, I got a degree in business from U of F, and then I got my MBA from, you know, whatever, and right? I've been managing banks for the last 20 years, and then I was promoted, and so forth. So she asked our temple president in Chicago, she said, so what are your qualifications for being temple president? And he said, well, I don't have any qualifications. And for the next 10 years, my mother would say, you know, the leaders in your movement aren't qualified. Okay? So in that case, probably he shouldn't have been so humble. But the... Like Narada told the snake disciple, he said, don't bite, but show your hood. So, but the point is that generally people don't even have an idea that humility is a good quality or something to aspire for. It's not part of their idea. So even if the only humility you can get is just some sort of fake, you know, semblance of humility, oh, Prabhu, I'm so fallen, and you don't believe a word of it. But even if that's all you can do, at least you're accepting the principle, at least you're accepting the principle that one is supposed to be humble. And if that's all you can do today, then that's being always humble for us today. Does that make sense to you guys? Mm-hmm. Yes? And why do we need to give up pride?
It looks heavy.
It looks heavy. It is really heavy. Without giving up pride, we cannot advance at all. Can you teach somebody who thinks they already knows everything? Right? You can't even get directions into town if you're prideful. Right? You need to be willing to hear. And as we'll progress in Mana Shiksha, what's going to happen in Mana Shiksha, especially once we get to verses 4 through 7, is we're going to be going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And you might say, well, if I give up all pride, then I'll just have some low self-esteem and everybody will step on me and, you know, this trinadapi lower than the grass. And lower than the grass because the grass bounces back up, and lower than the grass, I'm just going to stay down. And that sounds awful. Why would I want that? But when we give up all pride, pride is in an inauthentic self. Everything that we're proud about is inauthentic. And when you remove what's false, you have what's real. And what's real, interestingly enough, is really worth being proud about. But when we have what's real, we don't feel proud about it at all, because we know we're just simply part of Krishna. When we reveal our real self, then we have most of the qualities of God. We are beautiful. We are powerful. We have knowledge. Right? You read the list of the qualities and nectar devotion of the pure soul. Wow! So when you remove the false pride and come to absolute humility, you find that you're wonderful. And Krishna says to relish and rejoice in the self. When we discover who we are, we're like, wow! What a wonderful who I am. Right? So the pride is in false things. The pride is in, I'm the controller of the world. I'm the owner of these things. I know so much, and I know what to do, and I am the best friend. I'll be your friend. You know, all this stuff. So when we get rid of that stuff, then we have a self-esteem that's based on something genuine. I mean, we have these words like Atmarama. Many of you have heard this word, Atmarama? What does that mean?
Self-satisfaction.
Self-enjoyment. What does Rama mean? Enjoyment. Enjoying yourself. Atmarati, the words are. That rati is one of the words we have in this verse, verse 1. It means loving yourself. Loving yourself. So we should not be afraid of giving up pride. In fact, we should be very eager to give it up. And this Mana Shiksha is going to take, as I said, to deeper and deeper layers of pride, which are going to be removing. And at the end, when we come to verse 8, then our heart becomes a beautiful city, devoid of this pride, where then we can really experience true love and true self-awareness. So, as I say, I think today we'll just stop here. I was going to do verses 1 and 2, and we can have a little bit of time. You see that sort of kind of a little bit. we can have time for some, just make maybe 5 minutes or so for some questions and comments. Yes?
Okay, well, I have a couple, so I guess I'll just choose one for now.
Okay.
Did Srila Prabhupada, did he talk about Mana Shiksha?
Yes.
What was his comment or feeling towards it, if he said it?
Well, he was referring to it as one of Raghunath Das Goswami's books, and of course as the guidebook.
For
entering into Raja, that's what it is.
So, how come he didn't get into it?
Well, I will say that if you follow all of Srila Prabhupada's instructions, you're automatically going to be doing Mana Shiksha. And in fact, when we get into verse 3, we're going to see how the process that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati taught and the process that Srila Prabhupada taught is Raghunath Das Goswami's Mana Shiksha.
This was solidifies it.
Yes. This is, you have it just kind of codified in one place. But if you take what Srila Prabhupada taught, I mean, you'll find, when I was writing that chapter about Bhaktisiddhanta, I was just finding all these parallels between what Bhaktisiddhanta was teaching and what Raghunath Das Goswami was teaching in Mana Shiksha. And you'll find the same kind of thing everywhere throughout Prabhupada's books. What I found very helpful here is, okay, it was all in one place in a very short systematic way, and I could see how it all fit together. It reminded me, in another way, I suppose, a very different way, of how I had high school students. I used to try to make available to them whatever electives they wanted, because we had a very small school, and I didn't want them to feel they were being left out of the, 2,000-student high school. So some of my students said, well, we'd like to have an elective in Ayurveda. So I was able, thank you, Krishna, to work out something with this distance learning. There wasn't online learning in those days. A distance learning Ayurveda class where I was studying, I signed up, and I paid the fee for me to learn, and then I got extra material for my students at no extra cost. So I was just like a few steps ahead of them in the course. We were basically co-learning together. As I went through it, I realized, wow, a lot of the stuff that Srila Prabhupada had us do is based on the Ayurveda. There was some, scientific, Vedic scientific principle to the way, I'm sorry to say this, but the way he had us dress even. There was something there in what he had us eat and in the schedule he had us follow. He wasn't telling us to wake up early in the morning just to tell us to wake up early in the morning. And as I studied it, I gained all this appreciation because Prabhupada didn't usually, sometimes, he didn't usually present things in terms of the Ayurveda. And when he did, if you didn't know the Ayurveda, you wouldn't even know that that's what he was doing. He might use the words like dhatus. But if you don't know what the dhatus are, you don't know that Srila Prabhupada's pulling from this greater tradition. And it gave me so much appreciation for Srila Prabhupada's books that I say, wow, that Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is a science. He really means it, and it's a whole holistic science. And that was the same thing that happened when I studied Manashiksha. I just gained so much appreciation for the process that Prabhupada was teaching. And I started finding in Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's lectures, this is what he's taking us to, and this is what he's taking us to, and this is what he's taking us to. He's taking us down this path. Is that all right? Yes.
Hare Krishna, once again.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the wonderful lecture. So from what I got from the lecture was that love without action is pure sentimentalism.
Yes.
And then action without love is pure mechanical.
Yes.
So is this involved in karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness?
That is a very good question. We will talk a little bit more about karma yoga in text 3. But if you really want to get into the differences between the yoga, I have a seminar which you can probably find online on Bhagavad Gita chapter 12. And I would probably just kind of refer you to that. Karma yoga is a little different from bhakti yoga, although karma yoga, some of the aspects of karma yoga are in bhakti yoga. Karma yoga is where you're being a pious person in the world, but you're dedicating your piety to Krishna, or you're dedicating your piety to the Brahman or to liberation, rather than trying to use your piety to go to the material heavenly planets or to be a happy person in this world. So the main difference between karma and karma yoga is your motive. In both, you're being a pious person, but in karma, you're being a pious person because you want to be rich and famous and etc. in this life or the next, and in karma yoga, you're being a pious person because it's going to purify you.
Also,
but I would say more action and love is how Prabhupada translated bhakti yoga as devotional service. Both devotion and service. But particularly here in verse 1, it's not just devotion and action, but it's also devotion and action plus humility. Because just devotion and action even, without the addition of humility, is not going to take you to Vrindavan. It might take you to Vaikuntha, and that we'll touch on in text 4. It's not going to take you to Vrindavan. And one place this is nicely explained is in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopakumar has gone all the way to the spiritual world in Dwarka, which is not exactly Vaikuntha, but not quite Vrindavan either. And he wants to go there, from there to Vrindavan. And Narada Muni says, you have to go to the earth planet, to the earthly Vrindavan, because you have to become humble. He says, without humility, you will not develop the kind of love that they have in Vrindavan. So this particular addition of humility, which is a thread throughout Manashiksha, is essential to enter Vrindavan. Yes?
In the in the Bhagavad Gita, it also says that like a pure soul, a pure devotee, seeks action and inaction, and inaction and action. So I think ultimately also, a pure devotee is only a witness. He's not really doing any action.
Yes, that is also true. And we're going to look at that verse, that specific verse. We were going to look at it tonight had our equipment been working at 6:30. We will look at that verse tomorrow. In fact, that's the very first thing that we're going to talk about tomorrow after we sing verse 2. The next thing we're going to do is that verse that you quoted from the Bhagavad Gita.
So are you pleased with my questions?
I am more than pleased with your questions. You are anticipating Raghunath Das Goswami's next point.
That's my total purpose tonight.
John, you just know what Raghunath Das Goswami Bhaktivinoda Thakur are going to say in text 2 tomorrow. So.
Thank you. Woohoo.
Yes?
When you're explaining the different levels of devotees, you mentioned the importance of being non-sectarian.
Yes.
We had all the people from the different religious denominations in level 2, but then in level 1, it seemed like they weren't from different denominations, so I just wonder.
Oh, okay. Well, certainly if they're in level 2, they're also in level 1. But I like your point because
level 3, meaning the highest level.
Oh, the highest level.
Yeah.
The highest level is just those who are in Vrindavan. So the highest level is not even those who are worshipping Narayana. Because this is a guidebook for how to go to Krishna in Vrindavan. So we're not saying that there can't be other pure great devotees of Ram, or Nisinga, or Varaha, or, you know. But this is a guidebook for, do you want to go to Krishna in Vrindavan? That's what it's for. So if you want to go to Krishna in Vrindavan, then the highest people are those who are with Krishna in Vrindavan. It's like if you say, well, I want to become, you know, a chemist. Well, then the highest people are people who are chemists. Whereas if you want to become a biologist, the highest people are people who are biologists. So like Hanuman wouldn't be particularly interested in this book. He would, in fact, find it a little annoying. He'd say, where's Ramchandra in this book? I mean, he could take the principles and apply them to his worship of Ram. But he'd be kind of, you know, when, there's a story also that Sanatana Goswami tells when Hanuman is called by Krishna in Dwarka, and he's like, well, yeah, it has to be Krishna's Ram who calls me. When Krishna is Dwarkanath calls me, I'm not so inclined. So it's, we could say, and you know, we do say that the worship of Krishna in Vrindavan is higher or more complete, like what Nanda was talking about in her class this morning, Akila Rasa Mita Murti, that Krishna contains all of the rasas. So we can say from a tattva position, from a detached, objective position, that Krishna is the highest in Vrindavan, and therefore the devotees who are mentally with Krishna in Vrindavan are the highest. However, for each of us, the form of Krishna who is dear to our heart is the highest. So if one is not attracted to Krishna in Vrindavan, if one is really attracted, like Prabhupada talked about Bhishma, and it's interesting that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his commentary on Manushiksha we should call out to Bhishma. But Bhishma, although he knows about Krishna in Vrindavan and he asks for the blessings of the gopis of Vrindavan, that's not where he wants to go. He wants to go to Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada commenting on this says there's really no difference. It's a matter of personal taste. So it's interesting. The other day I was speaking with one of my godbrothers who told me about a conversation he had with another godbrother who had said to him, I'm not really that attracted to Krishna in Vrindavan. I'm more interested in the Pandavas. And the godbrother who was telling me this said, I told him, well, you should be in another movement. And I objected. And I said, why can't people in the Hare Krishna movement want to go to Dwarka or Hastinapur? We don't have, you know, we don't have like a doorkeeper that says you have to have Krishna in Vrindavan as your ultimate destination. Now, if you've had an awakening of your eternal spiritual identity, which perhaps some of you in this room have, and if that awakening of your original spiritual identity draws you to Mathura or to Dwarka or to Ayodhya or even to Vaikuntha, then you would have to take Raghunath Das Goswami's principles of Manushiksha and apply them to that situation. Frankly, even, and we'll be discussing this as we get into later verses in Manushiksha, If you're not one of Radharani's Gopi assistants, you'd even have to do that. Because our acharyas generally put the template, the default value, as entering into an amorous relationship with Krishna following Srimati Radharani and her girlfriends. But suppose you wake up to being a cowherd boy. And in traveling around the world, I meet many members of in our Hare Krishna movement who have started to awaken to their original relationship, and they're not all gopis, followers of Srimati Radharani. They're not. Some of them have a parental mood towards Krishna. Some of them have a friendship mood towards Krishna. Does that make sense? Some of them are attracted to Krishna and Dwarka. So they need to take these instructions and say, just like, and Prabhupada wrote, for example, in the 10th canto, Mother Yasoda's churning butter. And he said, so those who awaken to loving Krishna as a parent, they should meditate on this verse. So we would have to take these instructions of Raghunath Das Goswami, meditate on, which he's going to be giving in a later verse, meditate on Radha, Krishna, Lalita, Vishakha, Radha, Kund, Govardhan. Well, everybody in Vrindavan meditates on those. But if you're a cowherd boy, you're going to be more meditating on Subal and Sridhar. So because he has this, this is going to Krishna in Vrindavan. Therefore, he's saying that. But you find Brihad Bhagavatamrita part one, you know, who's the highest devotee? And there's different highest devotees in each realm. Does that answer your question? And thank you so much for asking that. I'm really, really glad that you asked that question. Thank you. It's getting a little late. What's our time? Should we end now and take another question? Or?
7:40.
Is there anyone who hasn't asked a question yet who has a question just on verse 1? Or you want to ask your second question?
I could ask one.
You had a second question. Go ahead and then we'll end there.
Okay. So I guess it's kind of what you were just talking about, like the inner path, that could that also mean like Hanuman's inner path is only toward Ram? Because
it could, but one of the things that really bewildered me about Manushiksha when we were first starting was this instruction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Dhanachandra Goswami, who's in the disciplic line from Vikeshwara Pandit, taught the outer path of attaining Krishna in Vrindavan. And Raghunath Das Goswami taught the inner path of attaining Krishna in Vrindavan.
What is that outer?
And we will discuss that when we get to verse 3. The outer and the inner path. Or if you want, you can pick up a book now and read it tonight. We got into this particularly with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's logo for the Gaudiya Math. And also really comparing Dhanachandra Goswami's book, Gaur Govinda Archana Smarana Padati, which is a description of the outer path of attaining Krishna in Vrindavan, with Manushiksha, which is a description of attaining Krishna on the inner path.
But why would someone want
tomorrow, Krishna willing, if our equipment works at 6:30, we will do verse 2 and 3. And I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Where is that devotee who I promised verse 4 to tomorrow? Yes, I'm so sorry. We're not going to get to verse 4 tomorrow because of the equipment. So that'll be the next day. But we'll be discussing this. What is the difference between the outer and the inner path of attaining Krishna in Vrindavan, and how this inner path is the path being taught in our Hare Krishna movement. And why would anyone want to take the outer path? Well, there's a lot of reasons why people would want to take the outer path, which is also a bona fide path. So I want to thank you very much, especially